Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
You're going to send a text first or something?
No. I keep...
Your friends.
You never believe what I'm doing now.
I keep them in my notes on my phone because if I write them down on bits of paper, I lose them.
Okay. I'm a feminist, but last night I did the Amnesty International show, Secret Policeman's podcast, and the Guilty Feminist curated it and put it on. And I had a dream the night before that the audience would be full of men with their arms crossed, complaining that I'd ruined their childhood by making Victoria Wood's Barry and Frieda a lesbian anthem, which we totally did, and changing Monty Python's Four Yorkshire Men to the Four Yorkshire Women. I'm delighted to say it was a triumph. Yeah. Aisling was one of the Four Yorkshire Women.
That there I was.
Yeah. And instead of living in Holing Ground, she lived in the gender pay gap. It's coming out. It's going to be a podcast, so you'll be able to listen to it.
I am a feminist, but one of my favourite things to do, and like, this is adorable, I absolutely love doing this, is I love to go out with men just before they're ready to get into a relationship. Ha! It's my friend Jess who knows it's true.
You feel you warm them up for somebody else?
Oh, I've done such great work for other women. That's how much of a feminist I am. Yeah. Can I also just say, I will be talking like this for the whole show. And so to anyone listening or watching with a giant boner, you're welcome. But yes, my voice is slightly
Tom,
sexy.
Can you edit that in? Will Aisling have to say that again? It's fine, thank you.
I'm a feminist, but when I'm having a super insecure day, I can't decide whether I want to be a super petite woman or a really well-built man.
I am a feminist, but as a 21-year-old woman, I refuse to acknowledge the fact that I'm 34 in public.
You can sell 26 in Hollywood and that's all you need to do.
Damn, thanks.
I had a friend once say, how old do you think I can get away with being, like, because she was going to Hollywood, and I said, she was 38, so I said, 32. And she went, 24? So I just said 32, what am I going to do now? And I just had to go, oh yeah, also 24. Brilliant conversations that I have with actors.
Do you know Gabby Logan, who's a wonderful sports TV presenter? You probably do from TV. She came to my birthday party this year, and she handed over a card. And she's like, oh my God, like, you look great, you know, you really look great. I was like, thanks, Gabs, yeah, thanks. And she's like, honestly, I would never know you're 40. And I was like, Gabby, it's not my 40th birthday. She's like, give me back the card, give me back the card. I still have it now. I'm bringing it. Yeah. Great woman. Less women in sport, I say. That's what I say.
I'm a feminist, but if I had a chance to body swap with Emmeline Pankhurst on the day certain women got the vote in the UK, or John Hamm's new girlfriend on the night they got together, I'd say deeds, not words.
I am a feminist, but while I actually expect women to like me, when a man does, I get that same feeling akin to when you clean your ear with a cotton bud, where you're like, oh yeah, no, that feels really good. That feels good, but I have to be careful because I could hurt myself here.
I'm a feminist, but yesterday I got given a tank top in the Wings by Feminist Fringe. And my first response in the Wings was, this is lovely, but I'm not showing my arms at the moment. And somebody was here yesterday, came back today, and left me a note saying, Deborah, we know you're a feminist who appreciates a sleeve. So here you go. Thanks for your support, Selena. And this is from Refuweeji. And I think we're going to be hearing from Refuweeji later as our character of the week. And the definition here, a person who upon arrival in Glasgow is embraced by the people of the city, a person considered to be a local.
See also Glaswegian.
See also Glaswegian. Isn't that lovely?
Gorgeous. Oh, gorgeous.
Live from Acura Hall. Is this clock obscuring my face, sir?
Slightly.
Okay, I'll just...
Well, look like you're sad about that for a second, would you?
Yeah, could you want me to move it more over so it totally obscures my face?
A load of stuff. Like
yeah,
this.
Exactly.
It's like you're in a podcast.
You're very prominent there, sir. You're very prominent. I admire the way that a white man will sit right in the centre of the front row. Because I feel if I were a woman in this many men, I'd probably sit like four rows back to the side. But I love it. I genuinely do admire the confidence. And he's making direct eye contact with me and everything.
Did you know what you were coming to, though?
Oh, you did? Are you a fan of the show?
Yes.
Oh, I love you. Oh.
What's your name, sir?
Men get so many more brownie points for everything, don't they? Like, all of these women have come, and what am I saying to them? But he's a man, so I'm like, I'm won over.
What's your name, sir?
Colin.
From Edinburgh.
Arbroath.
I'll pretend to know where that is. Lovely. Close by?
70 miles away.
70. And you would walk 70 miles?
He would
when
walk,
you woke up?
He would walk 500 miles. Yeah, yeah. He would walk 500 more.
Lovely.
This is The Guilty Feminist, the podcast in which we explore our noble goals as 21st century feminists and the hypocrisies and insecurities which undermine them. I'm Deborah Frances White, and with me is Aisling B, and today we're talking about visibility. So visibility, Aisling, visibility. Tell me more, tell me more. Like, does he have a car?
So today's theme is visibility. We did mm-hmm. say that, didn't we? And I definitely
hope so.
Understand the concept very well and what we're going to be discussing because I've actually had to wear glasses for the last 7 years. So I get it, Debs, and I get why it's important to talk about in this because you probably covered a lot of stuff and then you run out. But visibility, when I was thinking about it, I thought about not just visibility, but the concept of invisibility. And there's nothing lovelier than having an invisible day for yourself. And that can come in any form, depending on what your life is like. But the idea of like staying in your house, getting rid of your kids, maybe putting them in a box. I don't know, I'm not a parent, I don't know what you do. But when you're on your own in the house, either you live on your own or you have a partner who's gone away, there's nothing better than an invisible day. I often think it's lovely that the ugliest you can be sometimes is en route to getting pretty. You know, when you do your processes, like an invisible day where you walk around with your bra off, dragging your tits along the gravel. And you put on your creams and there's a cream for your elbow and a thing and a spot here, which is a different type of spot to the one up on your nose, and there's something else, and there's you put on your creams, you put something on in the background, like the Real Housewives of New York City. So much drama! And you don't want to be judged for what you're watching, and you don't want to be judged for what you look like, and you don't want to be seen, and you're invisible, and you eat your food. And I often think that I would rather have like a photo released to the press of my vagina than one of me eating alone. I don't need a fork. Just that invisible feeling is so gorgeous to have one of those days. I think it's very important for us all to have those days. And why that invisibility is so lovely is because you choose it. But the worst type of invisibility is the one that you don't choose and you wish wasn't there. There's these four questions that Maya Angelou posits. And in a society or in a relationship or in a friendship, she thinks that they are four questions that if you don't get a yes to or worse a no, that it can make you feel so invisible. And being invisible and wanting to be seen and having a sense of belonging, it's one of those things you can't ask for, because once you ask for it, it undermines the whole point of asking to be seen. It's like you can't go, am I cool? Because to ask, am I cool, or what am I like when I floss? It's not going to be a yes to that.
If you're listening at home, I did floss. It's a new dance trend for the children.
All the feminists are doing it now.
I did it brilliantly, and Aisling said, so close.
So close.
Brilliantly.
But that's the thing about wanting to be seen, and the four questions that you look for an answer for, even in your relationship or in society, is, one, do you see me? And you know, in a relationship where someone's on their phone like, oh yeah, whatever it is, and we can all be guilty of this. And the second question is, do you care that I'm here? And they say a lot of like mental health problems that are added to homeless people is the idea eventually you think, am I invisible? That you're walked past so many times that you're like, am I even here? Can you see me? The third question is, am I enough for you? Or do you need me to be better in some way? We all know what that's like when we're in a relationship and we're like, I don't think I'm your gal. I think you need something more, and it's making me feel awful in some way. And similarly in society, I'm like, oh, I don't think you want me to be here. And the fourth one is, and this might sound a bit cutesy, but it's, can I tell that I'm special to you by the way you look at me? And that might sound a bit like, am I special? Am I a princess? Tell me I'm a princess, tell me I'm a princess. It might sound like that, but when you look at someone and did you care that you're there, there's nothing worse, and this happens a lot in our industry, which is the looking over the shoulder going, oh my God, hi, how long are you in Edinburgh for? For the podcast listeners, I'm doing a very good mime of looking over someone's shoulder. But you know, in this, and you're like, oh, I'm not special to you that I'm not here. And I find those four questions are so lovely in a sense, because especially our most important one is with our parents or our family. I remember doing a panel show once, and I had a couple of friends on it, and the best feeling in the world is when you're on a panel show and you're the same as everyone else and you know you can be seen, and you're allowed to be a dickhead just like any of the other dickheads. And that's a really important thing, to feel like you're just the same and you can get the piss ripped out of you. And I remember I was on this show and say the host was in the middle, and I had a friend beside me, he's an amazing comedian. But there was a point where he started to lean into my space so much that he was touching off me because he was looking towards the host. And I realized that like he'd kind of forgotten I was there, that like he was so involved in what the host was saying that he was leaning right into me. And I was like, I don't think he can see me anymore. Like, I'm here. And I'm also one of the fellow people on the show. And I made a joke about it because I kissed the back of his neck and I was like, you're close enough to kiss. And he woke up and was like, oh, sorry. But for like 5 minutes, he hadn't realized that he'd been leaning really close into me. I remember I was doing the first record of Taskmaster, and it'd been a long year of kind of lots of different panel shows and ups and downs. And I went to say something, and there was Bob Mortimer beside me, and Mark Watson was there. And I went to say something, and Mark Watson looked straight at me and smiled as I was speaking. And I was like, oh, shit, Mark can see me. I'm not a ghost. And when I read those questions, it's like someone can look at you politely on a show because you know how to make an edit. But when someone can see you and see in their eyes, and I could see Mark had a look on his face of like, can't wait to hear what she's going to say. Turned out to be shite and they had to edit it out, but was that the point? He never looked at me again? No, but I was really, and I suppose from my own, because the other, after invisibility comes a sort of a slightly worse one, which I personally sometimes get, but I'm assuming a lot of people of colour and people from diverse backgrounds get, which is half visibility, where you're there in a sort of token sense in some way, and you're seen, but you're not seen on the same level as everyone else. So a personal example of that for me was I was doing another bloody panel show, and the host introduced everyone, and I was the only gal on the show, which is fine. And again, a lot of my friends are on the show, but everyone gets a joke that's quite a sneering joke, which is great, very funny. That's the host kind of job. But when it came to me, It was kind of like, Aisling is this and this, unlike Joe, who's shit. And so the joke went back to Joe, and I think it's because there was a little bit of a fear of hurting a girl's feelings, which you can sort of understand comes out of a nice place. But I wasn't, it's like I'd been put in a dress instead of shorts with the rest of the people to play football, and I wasn't allowed to get it dirty. And I was like, oh no, now I feel like a little bit of a half-visible thing because I'm not included. I wanted to have the shit ripped out of me so I could use my skill and my job to banter back. But instead I went back there and I was like, oh, now from a starting position from the audience, I'm in this sort of like little slightly protected thing. And that half-visibility, I suppose, is something that might not change in my generation. We were doing the Amnesty International Secret Policeman's Ball last night. And it was a really special moment when they were doing a sketch from the 90s, the Goodness Gracious Me sketch, which is Going for an English, and it's a brilliant sketch. And I hadn't been at a gig where that many Asian stand-ups and comedians were all on stage at the same time ever. And it was really special to watch because everyone got to be, you know, Nish was an idiot. Big shout out to Nish Kumar. But like everyone got to be their whole selves from what they were as kids, not just having to represent one thing. You got to be your silly self and your stupid self and your idiot self without the sort of guise of your colour or your gender, your ability. And I suppose that's what visibility will hopefully bring. The more of us you're there, that you don't have to represent it anymore. You can just, again, be a dickhead on your own terms.
Bisha Kayali was in the sketch as well. She said she and Nish were hugging backstage going, we can't believe we're in this sketch with Kulvinda, who was one of the original guys, who's absolutely amazing. And they were like hugging. Cindy V was in it as well. And saying, oh my God, we're here. We're sort of 3D in this sketch. Mm. And I actually read in for Sindhu in the rehearsal because she was at her show. And it was amazing because it was like 3D being in this incredibly famous, brilliant comedy sketch. Although I was so scared I was going to accidentally do an Indian accent.
Very addictive.
But this is why visibility is important.
It is, but also in terms of seeing people, we can all do it in our own way in a relationship. Like we've all been guilty of going, yeah, did you? Oh my God, with our phones. And I was even thinking about it, even my mother, that we can often turn people into cartoons and not see them. Like we're all like, oh, shut up, mommy! Like, and I've turned my mother into a kind of cartoon character rather than seeing her as a woman, as all the different things she's been. You kind of can turn the people in your life into sort of cartoon characters of who they are rather than actually seeing them for a second and going, God, do you care that I'm here? No, mommy, I don't. I go away. We should have gone to Spain for Christmas. And so they're just, I love those questions and how we can apply them in so many ways. And so there are my thoughts on visibility.
Yay! Hello, Guilty Feminists. It's Deborah Frances White. I just wanted to let you know there is a show in London and some of our listeners complain they can't get tickets, that they're not available. So get in now if you would like to come to the Coliseum, the home of the English National Opera, on the 27th of November. Rachel Paris and I are doing a show about music. It's going to be a riot of a night. You've not experienced The Guilty Feminist until you've sung I Will Survive at the home of the English National Opera. It will be 10:30 p.m, but it's only a one-episode show, so don't worry, it won't go on forever and the tubes run late. Please book now at londoncoliseum.org. That's London, C-O-L-I-S-E-U-M.org. It's going to be a wonderful night. Also, we are coming around the whole of the UK to do a really big tour. This is going to be an all-singing, all-dancing, really fabulous, feel-good evening of, let's be clear, feminist cabaret, feminist vaudeville. This show will not be podcast. You've got to come out for it. And if you go to guiltyfeminist.com, you can see that we should be coming to a town or a city near you. Look for the closest one. Tickets are going fast, I warn you. So get tickets now for next year or they're going to all be gone. They really are going fast. They also make great Christmas presents. Cardiff, I'm going to come to you this Saturday, the 17th of November. My film, Say My Name, which is a comedy with a very strong female lead, will be at the Cardiff City Centre Cineworld as part of the Wales International Film Festival. It's on at 5:50 p.m. I'm going to introduce it along with the director, and also we're going to have a Q&A at the end. And please come up and feel free to say hi afterwards. I will be signing books. I'll be taking selfies. It's going to be a brilliant time. And if you did see it last time I was in Cardiff, then tell a friend, bring a friend. You can get tickets now at cineworld.co.uk. And tickets are £4.70 or £3.60 for students. And that's at 5:50 p.m. this Saturday, the 17th of November. Could you do me a favour? We really want to keep this podcast running every single Monday, including Christmas, throughout the whole year. And what that means is we need a little bit of help from you. Here's something you could do. On your phone, go to Apple Podcasts, or on your laptop, go to iTunes. Find The Guilty Feminist and rate and review a recent episode, or just some recent episodes. How are you feeling about the podcast this year? You've probably reviewed it in the past, but if you could put another review for, you know, something recent, that would be awesome. And obviously, give it 5 stars, gang. If you have already read my book, could you go to amazon.co.uk and review it there, and Goodreads and review it there? This really, really helps. And I really, really appreciate you doing it. Also, buying the book really helps. If you're looking for Christmas presents this year, go and grab the book from Waterstones or another bookshop or Amazon. And finally, if you haven't yet heard the Amnesty International Guilty Feminist Secret Policeman's podcast, it is absolutely a winner. You will hear a lot of messages about human rights that are really important and actions that you can take, but also some of the most extraordinary comedy that you will hear. We have some really, really big names, some of whom you know and love from The Guilty Feminist doing new material. Some of them you won't know or you won't have heard before. And we've revived some classic sketches with some feminist spins. So please, please, please go to our feed and listen to the Secret Policeman's podcast from Amnesty and The Guilty Feminist. And now back to the show.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Please welcome our wonderful guests for today, Jessica Foster Q, Brona C. Titley, and Kima Bob.
I'm Kima Bob, and I am a bit hungover.
If you're listening at home, we're at the Edinburgh Fringe. So that is the normal base place people are from. She's not turned up to work hungover.
Final weekend, baby!
It's a permanent state of the Fringe. She's been here for a month. It's just a cruise.
I'm Jessica Foster Q. I have the voice all the time that Aisling only has today. And I'm 11 years older than Kima Bob, and she has never met a hangover.
I'm trying to learn.
Yeah, keep trying, actually. Good trying.
Hi, I'm Brona C. Titley. I am a TV comedy writer and an actor. And I am relevant to the panel today because I am a dirty bisexual. I'm actually quite clean and pure and chaste. But for some reason, saying dirty before bisexual makes it sound so much more fun.
Like nasty woman.
That's right, babe. And I am not hungover, guys, because A, I'm a professional. And B, no alcohol passed my lips last night, but I do sound also husky because we had a bit of a sing-song at the bar last night after the Secret Policeman's Ball, and while other people sang, I shout-screamed, which is the only way that I can sing. I will survive at 3 a.m., so yeah, I'm just as sexy as Aisling B. And I know what you're thinking, oh, another Irish voice on the panel, oh, I bet they know each other.
Jedward.
Yeah, well, as it happens, we're best friends, so your racism was right this time. We do know each other.
She's my soulmate for 15 years.
Oh, my God.
I'm John, and she's Edward.
together were John and Edward. There's so many songs being sung last night. And so fun. Also so many white women. And so I knew like 2 out of 10 songs. I was like, yes, The Killers, relevant to me perhaps. Like, I was like, what's happening?
I don't think those songs were white so much as British.
It was so much going on. I was very confused. I was just like, I'm going to sip my wine over here.
Kima, you are always visible just by your...
Yeah.
I said to Kima at a recent show, because I thought this was a bit that she did, I was dancing with her at a party, and I just went, Kima, why are you so cool? She went, the 2 M's, melanin and marijuana. And she didn't even remember saying it. That's how cool... She is.
You gotta drop those gems, baby.
Yeah. All right, so my contribution today to visibility is something that I saw at the Fringe. I was like, I need you here for the visibility show. Please welcome to the stage the wonderful Power Play. Woo! Sophie.
Hello, I'm Sophie.
And I'm Emma.
Yay! Now, Emma and Sophie, can you briefly give us the elevator pitch for what Power Play is? And then Emma and Sophie are going to be our game show hosts. That's what's exciting.
Woo. Okay, so Power Play, we're an activist theatre company, started this year, and we are doing two things. Immersive theatre, which is all female-led, and we've taken over a flat and commissioned 4 pieces of new writing written by women, including Emma.
Whoop.
Fringe First and another award-winning, Philippa Braganza award-winning. Thank you.
Yes, we win awards. Women win awards.
Yes, they do. And also, we are here collecting data on the gender breakdown of the Fringe. And this is, we think, the first time that anyone ever, well, globally, has actually investigated gender at this level. So we know that there are massive gender inequalities in theatre and that they get worse the higher up the kind of like theatre tree you get. But we do not know when and where this kind of female drop-off rate happens. So we are doing an academic study into gender at the Fringe.
So, Power Play. They're pretty impressive young women. And today, we're the quizzies.
This sort of feel like we're on the chase.
Exactly like that.
If we get all the questions right, do we get to win like a very visible woman?
Last time we had Tunnock's tea cakes, but maybe...
Oh, that's much better.
Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah. Basically the same. Such a great premise.
Okay, so the first question is, 65% of audiences are women. Woohoo! In theatre. Yeah, brilliant. Now, what I want to know is whose stories are they seeing? So the question is, what percent of playwrights are female?
Is this where? In the Fringe or in the world?
In the UK.
UK. Okay, so 65% of theatre audiences are female?
Yeah. But what percentage of playwrights of those plays?
So, okay, I'm going to buzz for this one because I know the answer based on what I saw, and the answer is 100%.
So 100% of plays in the UK that make it to the stage are by women.
It's my answer and I'm sticking to it.
I love you because you're a dreamer.
The one's worth seeing.
Okay, Aisling?
I have to agree with everything Brona says.
Okay. She's my best. Jess?
I'm saying 52% because Brexit.
Eva?
Boop, boop. That's my one. I feel like I'm not going to go very optimistic here. I'm going to go for 34%.
Okay.
This dude's actually trying to win.
I think it's going to be lower. This is my guess. It's going to be about 25% of plays that make it to the stage are written by a woman. Audience, do you want to shout out?
Yeah, what do you think?
How?
Oh, Jesus.
15. I got 38 down there.
Okay, so what's the answer?
What's the answer?
30.
30%.
It's a third.
That's
right, baby.
Plus, I was Kima's only 70% off.
But yeah. I won something so sad.
Yeah, yeah.
I know.
Kima's in the lead, but she's winning a sad race. Okay, all right.
Is the actual prize for this quiz just depression?
Yeah. But the question is, how bad?
They're all
depressing, but how depressing?
We signed off on a positive one. That's probably like the...
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know. Okay.
Okay.
All right, so the next one is... What percentage of the theatre box office for new writing goes to women?
I'm going to give a real answer this time because nobody liked my utopia answer the last time. 8%.
Bloop, bloop.
28%. What do you, sorry, oh, that was your professor. Sorry, yeah. Sorry.
I feel like we should have discussed the admin of the quiz before we did it. Just saying.
Women can't afford buzzers.
Yeah, we actually needed like real buzzers.
What do you reckon?
Bloop, bloop.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm gonna go for 30% again. I feel something happening there.
Oh, I'm so sorry. It's so much lower than 30%.
Oh, Jesus.
It's 13%.
What?
Okay. Yeah. And if you want to find out more about that statistic, it's called British Theatre Repertoire. That's the study.
Wow. Okay. So,
13%. Point to Brona.
So, 35% of the writers are female, but they're only getting 13% of the box office, and that means the more expensive plays are all male.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So the stage time we get is actually in theatres above sweet shops.
Now this is like Countdown with the maths.
Actually, I've got another question that's directly related to that. So, how much more would you pay to see a play written by a man? By that, I obviously mean how much more, statistically speaking, do men get?
Okay, any guesses?
They're just better, though.
Percentage more on the ticket, would you pay? You going to see a play in the West End?
9%?
23%
Fuck
more.
Off!
23%!
Their plays are not 23% better! Sorry, don't you fuck off.
No, you're off.
See you later.
What a way to ask our guest to leave, Gemma.
Sorry, I mean time's up. No, sorry, go on.
So, this question's in two parts. So a new play written by a woman will be put on a theatre that is what percent smaller and will have what percent fewer performances?
Oh. Boop, boop. 40, 20.
40 and 20? Okay. Actually, they'll be put on a theatre that is 24% smaller and will have 69% fewer performances.
At least that's a sexy percentage.
That is another way of saying 40, 20.
Yeah.
So you can put on your plays, bitches, but not for long.
4 nights. Well, Amelia at the Globe is the most extraordinary feminist polemic that I've ever seen. It's hilarious. It's moving. It was like going to feminist church. It's lucky that the Globe doesn't have a roof because it would have come off at the curtain call. And it's got something like 10 performances.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
we are three women of colour in the lead and a female playwright. Whole cast is female, director's female. Mm-hmm. And it's getting like, you know...
2 weeks or something.
An incredible production. So we have to, you must, lobby the Globe. Get on Twitter, because of course they'll put it on more. Of course it'll transfer to the West End if we demand it. Have you got a final question?
We've got one more question. Final question. And this one is, what percentage of the Olivia Award for Best New Play has gone to a woman?
I'm going to go back to my old friend, 8%.
Okay.
Agreed.
I hope it's not no percent, is it? Don't tell me it's no percent.
It's actually 2%. 98% of the Oliviers for Best Play have been awarded to a man. And actually, last year in 2017, no female writers were nominated.
How many have there even been? Like 50?
I think 80?
The part of your research I'll be really interested to see is when you were talking about the drop-off point. Because it's always like we all start off as kids not knowing we're women or men or whatever we decide we end up being.
School, who's more into drama? Sorry.
But, yeah.
Exactly.
What are the things in your life that start kicking you down that you don't get to be the version of yourself you'd like to be, or what are the things that make it extra hard?
I have good news for us. There are 7 women on stage right now.
Given 65% of audiences for theatre are female, we can change this.
Yes.
Because we can demand better, we can demand more, we can demand female stories, and we can demand diverse female stories as well. Different gender expressions, different races, different disabilities. We can demand it, and we must. And
definitely.
Power Play, you were doing such a wonderful thing. Can I just say, for visibility, what are your full names?
Emma Dennis Edwards.
And?
Sophie Compton.
You were on Facebook.
Yeah.
And what's the website so we can find PowerPlay?
So powerplaytheatre.com, and on social media we're at PPlayTheatre.
Wonderful.
Oh, PPlay?
PPlay.
Some PPlay.
I've been to that website.
Big round of applause for PowerPlay.
Thank you so much.
Dear Guilty Feminists, if you are in London, we are recording our new series of Global Pillage. And I have to tell you, we've already recorded 4 episodes and it's the best season yet. Come along 4 p.m. on the 8th of December, where we'll be recording 2 episodes back to back with an interval, or December 15th, where we are recording 1 big end of term Christmas episode. Feel free to come up and say hi afterwards. I'll be in the bar, grab a selfie, I'll sign your book. It is a brilliant diversity-based panel show with 2 teams of comedians versus you, the hive mind of the audience. See you there.
Like to hear some stand-up comedy?
Yeah.
Then please welcome to the stage the wonderful Jessica Foster-Kew.
Hey. Hello. This is nice. I mean, lots of things can make us invisible. Our colour, gender, age, and of course, cloak. Get in. Thought that in the shower. I think it's complicated, isn't it? Ashley touched on this. We're in this funny situation where invisibility can be a gorgeous thing if you've chosen it. But also I feel like there's perhaps a bit of a dichotomy. We're, for our own safety, kind of innately drawn towards trying to blend in a lot of the time, I think. We just want to be like other people, don't we? And I know that that's quite an innate thing because I'm watching my 2-year-old do it at the moment. He's nearly 3. He's another white man. Sorry. Let's do better. But what's amazing is watching, now that he can speak, watching how differently he does it depending on who he's with, right? So I'm unabashedly posh. I'm on a spectrum of poshness. I'm quite far up the posh end of the spectrum of poshness. But he... So over morning the other day, so my partner and I take turns getting up with him first thing and having our day ruined. Just because of the hour, I mean. I don't hate my life. And it was my turn to get up, and he'd come in. It was about 6 in the morning, and he'd come in, and he woke me up, and I was like, yeah, all right, I'll get up like that. And then he said to my partner, you stay there, sleep if you want. Mummy and I are getting up. 2 years old, mummy and I. What have I created? But I know it's okay because he goes to a nursery in southeast London where we live in Lewisham, and he goes to the cheapest, most flexible to my working hours nursery. But it's not got a very good Ofsted. Give a shit, they're kind. And all the women that work in there are from Kent, and they've all worked in there for a very long time. It's one of the best places I've ever been in the universe. During the World Cup, I dropped him off, and Iris, who runs the nursery, said, oh, off you go, have a nice day. Oh, before you go, Mum. And I said, yeah, what's that? And she went, it's coming home, it's coming home. I was like, oh, I love it, I love them. They are awesome. I call these toddlers leaving, it's coming home. It is the most, and also it's the most diverse nursery I've ever seen. I'm from Dorset, there was no such thing. It's an awesome nursery. But what's most brilliant about it is that even though there's this 2-year-old in my world that says, mummy and I, when he comes home from nursery for an hour and a half, he talks like Danny Dyer. It is amazing. We got home that same evening and sat down to watch, I think it was England, Colombia, and as soon as the telly went on, he went, I've seen this one last night. I've already watched this one, mummy. We watched this last night when we was in Dulles. What did you do at nursery today, Rudy? I've been playing a piano. Hero. So I think from all that, like, it's just this glaring kind of example of how we're just drawn towards wanting to blend in. And I think more and more then, if you do make an effort to try and be visible, especially when you're up against it in some sense, it takes a bit of bravery to do that, I think, a lot of the time. It takes some ovaries. So hats off to those who are trying. And you won't ever meet anyone who is more desperate to be visible than a comedian. You know that naked woman in the house over the road that never shuts her curtains? Not a euphemism. That's us, that's comedians, but with our emotions. Thank you.
Jessica Fosterkew, everybody!
Rona, you referenced before being for bi visibility. That's something I've heard a lot about because I do a podcast like this. And sometimes bisexual people say they're invisible, and they say heterosexuals are visible, gay people are visible, although there's obviously been a lot of marginalisation. Bi visibility is a big thing. Can you explain what it is?
Yeah, just, you know, for the sake of visibility, if you could please use my preferred term, dirty bisexual.
I will not be doing that.
Filthy bisexual often works. Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's just a question of feeling like there is some representation, that you come from a community that exists, that we can see stories, that we meet people who are bisexual who talk about it. We see authentic stories written or performed by people who are bisexual or pansexual, which is essentially for me the same thing, but just a name thing. Holler to the pansexual at the end of the table.
Yeah, baby, identity. Get into it.
Can you tell me what
I've been doing that since I realised I was bisexual.
Jess has got a question.
Please, may I have a definition of pansexual?
Yes. Boop boop. For most people, it means that they date everyone, regardless of their gender and orientation and presentation and other Asians. And for me, it means that I date everyone but cis straight white men, because I believe oppression builds character.
And essentially, Jess, a lot of bisexuals would believe they're the same thing. It's just that it's a slightly older word. So, and you kind of tend to cling to the word that best described you when you were acknowledging or coming to terms with your own sexuality. I like the idea of saying I'm pansexual, because I would consider myself as someone who could be attracted to anyone on the gender spectrum, but I also just don't love the fact that it makes me sound like, you know, I have sexy time with frying pans. Because I only sleep with saucepans. But just
and
in
boys
terms...
who never grow up.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a beautiful word, pansexual. There's a great joke in that.
Yeah, Peter Pansexual.
I think we did it. We have dated Peter Pansexual. He only has one towel. But just in terms of, you know, the actual bi visibility, it is something, like, I do find that people sort of say to me on almost a weekly basis, now I'm actually married and I'm married to a woman, so people think
it's
I've
not me, unfortunately, should have been, but wasn't.
Yeah, felt like
Ashley,
a
I've told you
felt
before, like I have always found you extremely hideous.
We could fix that. We could fix it.
So I'm married to a woman now, which makes people think that I've picked a team and therefore stopped being bisexual. But, like, when you get married, you pick a person. You're not like, oh, I'm on the Fanny Express now for a while. But I do kind
Express.
Of, like, people do say to me on a weekly basis, so you as a lesbian or you as a gay woman. And I have that moment where it's like my level of arsage of correcting you, because you're sort of like, do I want to be the person that's like, oh, just for the interest of accuracy, hashtag bi visibility, I'm bisexual. Or do you just let it slide, at which point it's just not technically true and also slightly disrespectful to all the penises I've seen. And I have seen four. So I think it is a community that could use more visibility, and I think the best way to do that is, you know, stories. And we're starting to see more bisexual characters on television now, and good ones as well, not just like American TV dramas where they're like, oh, we've run out of storylines for this woman, so...
she's going to kiss a lady.
She's gonna kiss a lady. Oops, and we're not gonna show any of the intricacies of the relationship, just some sex scenes, which I am not complaining about.
What would you like to see more of in terms of, I mean, obviously you've been my soulmate and my best friend for a very long time.
I'm married.
I know, but I just feel like there's no, I'm never gonna stop trying. Sue, her wife, is here somewhere. Sorry, Sue. I actually heckled Brona's wedding speech going, "You should have been me!" And I don't regret it.
No. It was sad that we kicked you out of the vows.
I stayed at the window watching in.
Yeah, I think it's just a question of if
you
somebody
seem
is
very straight, Brona. If you wouldn't have said anything.
I feel like I've been here being visible as a bisexual since the start of this podcast. I did walk into the dressing room earlier and go, oh, can you see my face there? That is bi visibility. No, I think it's just a question of maybe just not assuming, like if somebody is dating someone at that point in time, you don't necessarily put them in the straight box. If they're dating same-sex person, you don't put them in the gay box, and you just have a slight more openness to the fact that there is other bits on the spectrum. Like, it does seem hard for like humans to grasp, but like we split the atom and we've invented incredible things like dresses with pockets, and we still can't like wrap our head around the fact that there might be people who are attracted to more than one gender. So just a little bit of openness.
The crazy thing is most of the LGBT community is bi or pan.
Yeah.
Like, right. I don't know the exact figure, but it starts with a 7. It's like 70-something.
So power play? Do you know?
Where are my LGBTQ plus stats? Come prepared, ladies. But, like, yeah, most of the community is bi or something. And it's, yeah. Like, I feel like bi people aren't always respected. And, like, I feel like sometimes in the LGBTQ community, people will look down on you while you're going down on them. And it's like, how is this not gay enough?
Okay. Kima Bob, have you got anything to plug?
Oh, heck yeah. I'm on the internet at Kima's Voice on Twitter and Instagram, and I host the Fuck It Up Comedy Club, FOC, I didn't swear, which is a Femmes of Color comedy club, and we live in London, and follow us on Facebook.
Great. Jess Foster-Q, anything to plug?
Yes, I'm on the socials at Jessica Foster-Q, and also I've got a podcast of my own that's all about eating called Hoovering. Please give that a listen.
Good. Very good. Aisling B.
You can find me on Twitter or Instagram at WeMissB, and I would like to also recommend the Hoovering podcast. Very fun and yummy, and Jess makes you food when you do it.
Brona?
Please follow me on Twitter at Brona C. Titley so we can take this flirtation further. And also, please, on August 31st, log on to Netflix and watch the stand-up special of the world's funniest, Aisling B.
Ooh. Yay! And if you could check out my other podcast, Global Pillage, at globalpillage.net and Grown Up Land at Radio 4. And now we have Charity of the Week!
Hello! And Lisa, I'm here from Refugee, which you heard about earlier. So, for people internationally, a Ouija is a Glaswegian, and a refugee is somebody who is made to feel welcome when they arrive in Glasgow after being forced to flee their home. Refugee gives welcome packs with things that people need, things that people might want, and welcome letters handwritten by people in Scotland to say, we're glad you're here. We also organise events and activities to connect old Scots and new Scots, which is the phrase we like to use. Aww. We're going to be rattling buckets if you can donate on the way out. We've got some wristbands to give out, so if you donate fast, you might get a free wristband. And for people at home, refugee.co.uk, you can donate money online on the website, and you can also send donations of gifts to go on the welcome pack, and we are always looking for more lovely handwritten welcome letters.
That's our show. Thank you very much to everyone here at the Pure Hall, Underbelly, Kima Bob, Jessica Foster-Q, Aisling B, Brona C. Titley. I've been Deborah Francis White. You've been wonderful. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
You have been listening to The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Frances White, guest co-host Aisling B, and our very special guests, Jessica Foster-Q, Brona C. Titley, and Kima Bob. And from Power Play, Emma Dennis Edwards and Sophia Compton. The recording engineer was Gary Boyle. Music was by Mark Hodge. The producer was Tom Selinski for The Spontaneity Shop. Thanks to Tony and Hannah at PBJ Live and everyone at The Underbelly, as well as all of you for listening. For more information about this and other episodes, visit guiltyfeminist.com.
She just taught me flossing, so I'm going to give it a go.
Because this literally, Debs, is going to take like 20 years off us. So you go like, and it just doesn't make any sense. That's the whole thing. And then you just, then you get like, ah, oh, you're so close to it. Yeah, that's really, you look like a 14-year-old Deborah. Yeah, it's great. It's great. Yeah, yeah, it is. I worry about your marriage. By the way.
How close am I to flossing? Just be honest. No, okay.
no need for such honesty. When I say just be honest, I mean just lie to me and make me feel good.
I'm not a dentist, but that wasn't flossing.